Good morning. This is Mary Jo Peel from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Riff Tracks, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 24th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hassenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. It is the last week of August, Chip. Do you know what that means in my lifestyle?
Less COVID, more fun.
Less filling, less COVID. More filling. It is Oktoberfest. Go to your local store and find my favorite beer of the whole year. The store is full of Oktoberfest beer. I went there yesterday.
And for our listeners, we just should remind everyone that Oktoberfest is September.
Which makes perfect sense. The Germans, of course, they're on it. They're early. They're on time, if not early.
Punctual. Steve, there is a way that the time must move, and I guess the Germans help us along with that. Officially in Munich, Oktoberfest cannot take place. We're still in a pandemic.
The second year in a row that it's been canceled?
Yes, but so that means they just have to send all their beer out, Steve, and that must mean that we must partake this socially distanced.
Problem solved.
And every group of people or brewery out there has their form of Oktoberfest beer.
And I have my favorite, and this show is not sponsored by Samuel Adams, but I have to tell you, I do have a case of Oktoberfest signed by Jim Cook, and he did do a good morning for us, if you remember.
Well, that means next week, I guess we have our bumper.
Oktoberfest is on.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, Chip, I made a commitment when we restarted Too Much Scrolling a few weeks ago that I was going to go and see a movie every week in a movie theater, and you said, finally, good, Steve's going to see a movie for our movie of the week. Chip, did you make it to the movie theater this week?
I did not make it to the movie theater this week, Steve.
Yes! I'm beating you on every week I have made it to the movie theater, and you haven't. I went this week to see the 1988 classic, and I use that in quotation marks. This is Hobgoblins, that you might remember as the Gremlins ripoff in 1988, directed by friend of the show, Rick Sloan. This was Riff Tracks Live. For the first time in a year and a half, down in Tennessee, the Riff Tracks guys were on stage and they beamed this movie into 600 movie theaters across the country.
Did they have an audience?
They did have an audience. For the first time since COVID, we got a live show from the Riff Tracks guys.
That's a big deal, because it just seems like things were going to be shutting down again. And to be able to sort of celebrate, at least get a taste of what a live event would be. So were you enjoying it in the theater with all of your good friends?
I certainly was. It was not a packed theater here in the suburbs of Chicago, but we had certainly a community of people that like movie riffing, that enjoy the comedy of the three guys that bring us Riff Tracks, and the short that they presented before the movie seems to have been the highlight based on the community that I've been reading through on the social media since. The short was very funny. The thing about watching this movie from 1988 that I've seen several times and hearing new jokes. The thing is, I'm kind of frustrated by the new jokes. I want to hear the old jokes, because they did this movie as a part of Mystery Science Theater 3000, and now they're redoing it as Riff Tracks with all new jokes, and I'm a little disappointed in their new humor.
So let's get back to the way these are usually presented. Is we get a short public service type of film, and then we get the main attraction. and you know, you use quotation marks. I don't even think you need quotations for that. The attraction, which is a usually a less than stellar movie. Yeah. So what was the public service announcement short on? Hopefully it was on vaccines.
It was not. This was an educational short instead. This was life in a medieval town and the idea of recreating a medieval village and showing us what life was like there. Very educational. This is the Coronet series. They do all the educational films from the 50s and 60s. And the funniest part was this one character had a scarf, a regular neck scarf, on top of his head, and he just walked around like that. And at one point he re-emerges into the film and Kevin goes, yep, folks, he's still wearing it like that.
Well, I, obviously wearing a scarf like that must be kind of some kind of signal to join him out in the forest. It's like the Renaissance Festival, right?
This was very Renaissance Festival for sure. Huzzah.
He comes back and his scarf has somehow moved. I don't know, understand why.
Right. We have had our share of riffing during the pandemic. Our friends at Down in Front have been broadcasting on Facebook Live and on Twitch all throughout the pandemic. Frank and Trace, friends of the show, the mad scientists from Mystery Science Theater, they have been doing live riffs every month during the pandemic, and now they are actually replaying some of them. They replayed their first one, Glenn or Glenda. They did that over the weekend. And on September 14th, they will be riffing The Brain Eaters from 1958. This is based on a Robert Heinlein novel set in Illinois, featuring a very young Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy.
Go to themadsareback.com for more information about that.
The logic is baffling there, Steve.
They're eating my brain. Why? Why are you letting them eat my brain? No, that's...
You went straight to Seinfeld.
I went Seinfeld instead of Shatner. Just to confuse you.
In fact, there you go. They could reboot Star Trek. But Jerry Seinfeld in there.
I would watch the heck out of that. I also got a chance to watch a couple of cartoons this week, Chip. The first one is the second episode of the What If series. We talked about this last week. Disney Plus is bringing out Marvel's What If, where they change around one aspect of the MCU, those stories that we know so well, and see what the logical flow of consequences would be of that one small change in the history.
And what was the subject this week?
This week, What If Yondu didn't go out to pick up young Peter Quill at the beginning of the Guardians of the Galaxy movie? What if Yondu was busy and he sent his two henchmen to go pick up Peter Quill, and the two henchmen, not being very smart, didn't pick up Peter Quill? They instead picked up T'Challa, who was going to become the Black Panther.
And what did he become, Steve?
He becomes Star-Lord instead.
Star-Lord?
And that scene where the alien does not know who Star-Lord is flipped on its head, because in that scene, he goes, I am Star-Lord, and the alien goes, oh, Star-Lord, I'm your biggest fan!
Well, my goodness. Well, first of all, I don't know if anybody really still knows who Star-Lord is. Well, you know, except for the people who watch the MCU.
This is a very interesting way of storytelling. You knew that scene. Even though that movie happened so many years ago, you remember that moment. And flipping it on its head, the shorthand that is available to your brain because of your knowledge of the MCU narrative is all in there. Thanos becomes a part of Star-Lord's gang in this movie because Star-Lord is just that much better a character than Peter Quill was.
Okay. They were both C or D level characters for a long time. And look at it. The MCU certainly has brought them up to the higher area. And I would say Black Panther certainly has an opportunity to be as large as any of the other Marvel characters going forward.
The frustrating truth, though, is that Chadwick Boseman has passed away. So that change, the potential for Black Panther 2 is still there, but it's not going to be the same without Chadwick Boseman.
Well, they certainly had an incredible pick, as they've done, as Disney and Marvel have done with all these Marvel movies. They just have been incredible.
Yeah.
But I feel confident they'll pick a good actor for the new Black Panther movie.
I agree. So these what ifs on Disney Plus, they are weekly, and you can find them on Disney Plus, and they do feature all of the original actors, or almost all of the original actors. Chadwick Boseman is in this one. He did record his voice before he passed away. We've got Karen Gillan as Nebula, Josh Brolin as Thanos, Michael Rooker as Yondu, Benicio del Toro as the Collector, and Seth Green as Howard the Duck.
There you go.
Featured heavily in this episode.
Steve, one of our big enjoyments of going to the Star Wars experience a few years ago was running into the Star Trek red shirts, who basically caused all sorts of mayhem.
Yes.
By delivering more Trek, less Wars posters and protesting throughout the event. So is there maybe some type of series that could be designed for all those red shirts out there?
This week, Paramount Plus gave us season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks that is pretty much exactly that. The very comedic cartoon version of Star Trek that looks at those red shirts and the chaos that they bring to the Star Trek universe.
It stars Guy and Dude and man,
uh-huh,
and woman.
And so, and the second episode,
They all have first names. They don't even have last names, Steve.
The second episode introduced a character named Jet. So you can add that to your list of nouns. And interestingly enough, episode 2 is all about a collector. There's a lot of fan service in this series, a lot of times where they are very reverential to the original Star Trek, but at the same time, tongue-in-cheek going, these are the things that happened, and boy, these are the funny thoughts that I had while I was watching it. The collector here is a fanboy. He's collecting things from the Star Trek universe, and boy, was there a fun interaction in this episode.
So this is an animated series?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And is it good animation? Is it made to look from the style of the 70s? What is it?
No, this is very modern design. This is definitely, this could be on Cartoon Network in 2021. It is very modern, and the way that the characters speak is very Gen X. This is definitely a nostalgia play aimed directly at certain Star Trek fans, especially fans of Star Trek The Next Generation from the 80s and 90s.
And this is part of Paramount Plus, which is a new streaming service.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Paramount, who was so on the ball at celebrating 50 years of Star Trek, continues that celebration with this, what is it, the 53rd or 54th year? So, here I mean,
yeah, it's frustrating, but I enjoy it. It is definitely made for me. I know that my mother, who is more of an original series fan, would not like the way that these people talk about the past. There's something about looking forward and the history of looking back that certainly is in the Star Trek Lower Decks.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. There needs to be more stories about the characters who are only there for an episode or two get called up to be beamed out.
Yes. You got a chance to get started on season 2 of a show of your own, right?
I did. On Apple TV Plus. There is season 2 of Ted Lasso was released a couple weeks ago. We are, I guess, 5 or 6 episodes into the series right now. This is being released every Friday, the new episode, which is frustrating because I am used to watching the Netflix way, which is basically watch the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
So this may have been a change. I don't remember. I remember last year when Ted Lasso was released, I recognized immediately what a change in attitude, maybe a change of zeitgeist for the time would be. It became a very caring. It was a nurturing type of program. It basically spoke to coaching and how to work with people who certainly have, you know, as many challenges as everybody else out there. So from the superstar, how do you communicate with that person, to the aging athlete who is on his last season and he just doesn't have the skills? How do you move forward? And then the young people who are just, you know, are going to be the future, who need to have the playing time, who need to be able to gain the confidence to grow. How do you get them to grow? And how do you build a team of all that? And Ted Lasso, which was originally started as kind of a joke through one of the NFL pregame series, became a true series starring Jason Sudeikis. And this is season two, and this is dealing with, they bring in a psychologist to work with all the players. Once again, I think that this is an empowering type of show and a change of maybe how we're a post-COVID time. It's kind of like where Animal Crossing was the game that was needed at the time. It's, you know, it's not a game of war. It's not a game of destroyed worlds. It's basically one where you go and you collect things and you build stuff. This is a series that kind of fits that need. It's one where you're building people and how do you work together, and how do I get Steve to that next level? It's a very positive show that's got some, a twist for every episode where you're learning something.
And I've heard some great things about this show. A lot of people are talking about how this show fits into our collective zeitgeist right now, what we're doing, who we are. It reminds me, I haven't seen it, but the talk about it reminds me of The Office. Is it kind of like The Office?
No, The Office was of its time too. Whether we're talking the original British version with Ricky Gervais, who really was kind of a clueless jerk, kind of a mockumentary type of thing, or Michael Scott, which was the American versions who was played by Steve Carell, who was kind of just a guy who was looking to be accepted and much more sympathetic, not less mean-spirited than David Brent, I would say. That was of its time too. And that was a mockumentary where you're having these candid moments. This is not. This is a story, and it is a great cast, and the idea was how to move characters from one place to another in a positive way. And then basically some hard decisions you have to make along the way. So one of the lead standouts is the gentleman who retired last year. He is now on the television. He is the pregame and halftime entertainment, and he is a little bit too candid, using words that are not appropriate for television, which the host constantly apologizes for. Like, for our young viewers, we apologize for what he said, but he's speaking the truth. And one of my favorite interactions with that was they were asking how this young player was going to play before the game, and the guy's response was, "He's a 17-year-old. I have no idea how he's going to play." We know he's got skills, but I mean, he's a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
And this type of candid response, like recognizing what a silly question this is, and how you're not out there with the players, you're not really getting a pulse of how the game is unfolding. You really don't know. These are talking heads. And he ultimately becomes disillusioned with that in a very lovely way. And one of the other great scenes in this is where that same character is working with the gentleman who he passes off the captain, the band that you wear when you're a captain of the team. He passes it off to the next generation. And that guy is really struggling with leadership on the team. And he's the hard guy. Like, you guys need to listen up. You need to play harder. You need to play smarter. And they bring the new captain to, you know, the middle of the inner city. And there's a soccer field set up, just like a basketball court can be set up in the middle of Chicago. And he tells the guy to go out there and play a few games. And he goes, I'm a professional. Why am I playing with all these amateurs? And the response was, ultimately, to remind him that this is a game.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to have fun. And if you're constantly in a leadership role and it's just dogmatic hammering away at them, you forget that there's a game that's part of this. And you, your job is as much to loosen the people around you and relax them and get them in to focus on working together and not the pressure of having to perform, even though the whole game is about performing. It's about how leaders interact. And so to put this in American perspective, because this is about this, the show, Ted Lasso, is about an American football coach going over and basically coaching a football club, a soccer club,
mm-hmm.
In England. This week, Tim Tebow, who is probably one of the greatest college quarterbacks, was cut by the Jacksonville Jaguars. And Urban Meyer, who is his college coach, has taken the head coaching job of a professional football team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and brought Tebow in. And the question you could ask is, was Tebow brought in not to make the team, because he was cut this week? Was he brought in to basically create the decorum of how the locker room should work? To basically have a person who is definitely a leader
mm-hmm.
show others how we're going to interact and work together. And then, you know, to be this sacrificial person that Urban Meyer has to cut because football rosters have to be below a certain number.
Because, of course, he was not brought in as the quarterback. He was brought in as a tight end.
Yeah, a different position.
Uh-huh.
And that's tough to learn, too.
Mm-hmm.
But he was cut. So recognizing, did Urban Meyer cut him to show that it's also a business?
Mm-hmm.
That is, so the goal is, how do you get the everyone to fall under a leader? And then the second part is, how do you get them to perform? And if you can't perform, remember, you are expendable. Every person is expendable. And that's the challenging part of, as you move up the levels of competition in a sporting event, it becomes about winning.
It's a show about leadership that Chip endorses. Let's write that down. Chip likes stories about leadership.
Probably, a series that many people would like. Who knows?
Yeah. I like science fiction and cartoons, and you like leadership. We got it.
All right. So, Steve, we've got some new stuff opening this week. Tell us about the new Willy Wonka film.
The new Willy Wonka. I don't think this is equatable to Willy Wonka. The new Candyman is a little bit of a different spin on the idea of the Willy Wonka story, isn't it?
This is a horror film, Steve. As if Willy Wonka with Gene Wilder wasn't a horror film.
Oh, boy. That was a scary children's movie. This one is a scary movie, not for children. This is the spiritual sequel to the original Candyman from 1992. And at the helm of this one is Jordan Peele. And he's telling the story of a now gentrified Chicago neighborhood where the legend of the Candyman began. And we're going to see lots of cultural and lots of different ideas about race in this story of Candyman.
Steve, is Sam Davis Jr. coming out for this one?
I think he's dead. I do look forward to this.
In fact, I would love that. They could just replace the Candyman, this horror, this Freddy Krueger. with Sammy Davis Jr. who comes out and sings a song or two. Drinks a cocktail and smokes a cigarette. It's a short set, Steve. It's a short set.
It is a short set. The Candyman, I do look forward to this one. I will watch just about anything that Jordan Peele brings out. He is one of my favorite storytellers of the 21st century. His brilliant ability to tell a story, I look forward to what he does with this Candyman.
Steve, are there any science fiction films that just look like science fiction?
Yes, the science fiction film of the week is called Science Fiction, the Science Fiction Science Fiction. No, it's called The Colony, and it is the most science fiction-y story you could think of. A distant future, a female astronaut shipwrecked, a long decimated Earth, and she needs to find what's going on and decide the fate of the wasteland's remaining populace. I mean, that's, boy, oh boy, that is formulaic.
And, of course, there is a jellyfish involved. So, you know, it's going to be good.
Good. Delicious.
Steve, I think Charles Xavier had a prequel put together during the pandemic. What was that?
Okay, so here we go. Here we go with the... How many... We should place bets. How many movies are going to take place during COVID lockdown? We get our first one this week. It's called Together. And yes, it features James McAvoy, one of my favorite actors working right now. This is a husband and wife are forced to reevaluate themselves and their relationship because of COVID lockdown. They're stuck in the house together. Here we go. This is not a movie that I want to watch, Chip.
Well, I was going to say that James McAvoy has an excellent Scottish accent. I mean, you can just hear it right there.
Mm-hmm. He has an American accent. He has an Australian accent. If you remember the movie Split, where he did so many different characters all in one skull, he is a stunning actor. And I might watch this for his work, but I have no interest in watching a pair in COVID lockdown right now. I'm sorry.
It sort of has maybe a romantic comedy type thing, or more along the line, Living Hell. You know what? It's a husband and wife who are forced to live together during this COVID pandemic with their child.
Yeah. Finding entertainment in that is challenging for me.
I don't know. I think they have a lot of... They're learning each other all over again.
Right.
And the other part about it that seems... it's got the generic music of this era playing over it. So you have that going for you. Anyway, it doesn't look bad. It doesn't look good. It just looks there. Steve, yeah. What if you were a person who liked Mystery Science Theater? Is there anything...
What if?
Is there like something that they could watch this week?
Good. Our friend of the show, Mary Jo Peele, who was the mother of Dr. Clayton Forrester in the original Mystery Science Theater 3000, has gone on to become one of our favorite riffers. She has her own show starting tonight on Twitch. It's called The Mary Jo Peele Show, and she's going to do this comedy variety show on Twitch tonight, and I look forward to seeing what the next generation of these comedians are going to look like.
And the comedy font for the title of this is the Mary Tyler Moore.
That is the joke. That is the joke. Mary Jo Peele Show, and we take the font from Mary Tyler Moore. Get it?
Will she throw the hat at the end?
I'm sure she will. She's going to make it after all.
All right. Excellent, Steve. Steve, I was thinking that maybe there's some happy clouds out there.
Yeah, there's a new documentary on Netflix, Bob Ross, Happy Accidents, Betrayal, and Greed, coming to Netflix this week.
That's right, and we put it in there because Bob Ross certainly is a shiny, happy person in the world.
Cultural icon.
And certainly our children have watched Bob Ross. And if you are ever in a moment where you're not feeling as happy as you need to, throw on a little Bob Ross. He's a very relaxing guy. He was a person that certainly we grew up on PBS. And he's got this incredible hair. And he paints these incredible scenes with the same colors. This is about after he's passed. You've got this property that everyone loves. And it's just sort of how maybe it worked. And maybe it's not as happy as clouds as it could be. My hope is that they're... In fact, what I've read about this is not tearing down Bob Ross at all.
Good.
But it's talking a little bit about basically how businesses work and how families interact with each other and some of the challenges with that. I love Bob Ross. if you love Bob Ross, maybe this would be something to watch to learn a little bit more about what's going on now.
Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week, and we've already previewed this a little bit, Chip. You went through one of the great courses this week, The Skeptic's Guide to American History. This was presented by Mark Stoller, a PhD at the University of Vermont.
Mark Stoller, or Stoller, was also a professor at the Naval Academy and also at the U.S. Military Academy. So we should know that not only is he teaching this course, but he also has taught some of the future military leaders a little bit about American history. This is a wonderful course that actually benefits listening to it more than once, because you're going to challenge how you understand American history, and it's going to be peppered by a lot of, well, just some things that are not true, that maybe it's a different way of thinking about it. I think one of the beautiful parts of this course is he does take the time to talk a little bit about how history is written by the people of its time and some of the what is important at one time. So at some point, it was important to create a mythology around the founding of the United States. So we did. So we got things like George Washington and the cherry tree and stuff like that. They're not true. Columbus Day is coming up. So, you know, this idea of taking historical people and wrapping it up in a bow to make it look like as a way to celebrate Americanness. I mean, the American experience, and how that eventually, you know, we get more of a skeptic's version. We get people who deconstruct American history. And, you know, where we are right now, where many people are taking what we would consider history and challenging it and basically, you know, removing names and statues and things of that nature, many, many times rightly so. But I'm sure there will be a change of that at some point. This is something that you could listen to or watch multiple times, because I've listened to many of these lectures before I go to sleep, where I'll listen to it for tonight, and then I'll come back and re-listen to it on a walk later on, because there's just so much to glean from the stories. We get a little bit of understanding about, you know, the first lectures on religious toleration and in colonial America that really didn't exist. That's something largely a byproduct of maybe the 60s or 70s, where we get this idea of tolerating people who have a different religious view from our society. That certainly is a very modern way of looking at things. Catholics were Catholics, Protestants were Protestants, other religions were other religions. And whatever version you grew up with, there wasn't a lot of mix. But certainly, you know, we've grown so much since that time. We talked a little bit about how we understand the modern conservative and the modern liberal as it's defined in the United States. Many of them are not the same as historical definitions. And the where that came from was the progressive movement, which has a conservative element to it, and also has a what we consider a progressive element today. And so that's where those terms flipped, and we get our modern sort of definition loosely based on how we would do that. I learned a lot about Andrew Jackson in this, who was not such a great guy. I learned a lot more about Jefferson and Hamilton, and how they viewed the world, and how we both we like to say things like, well, we talk about how we want to live in Jefferson's world, but we actually live in Hamilton's world. But the reality is as we define the world today, we're living kind of both of their worlds, and both of them would have fallen under this. We talked a little bit about empire building and how our history has worked. Did slavery really, was it the cause of the Civil War? The answer is yes, even if you say it's indirect. And when we use terms like states' rights and stuff like that, the North used those terms as much as the South uses them. And anytime a party was not in power, that's where that we get this argument that states have the right to determine themselves. We look a little bit about the American wars that we were in from all the way up to through Vietnam and learn a little bit more about World War II. This is just an eye-opening, beautifully put together course that I would recommend to anyone who would like to have a deeper understanding of the United States and its history. And I am going to look for more classes by Mark Stoller. I think that he is certainly a beautiful storyteller. And he also is a person who really understands his craft of history and where our ideas come from. And that is the depthness, how deep this gets. It's not just how you understand history, but where our thoughts are. And this is where it gets dangerous. Your children may be taught history a little different than what you were taught when you were in school. And if you haven't kept up with sort of what the modern thoughts are on things, you may get lost in that. And there's no definitive answer on how to view history. You can view it from how the historian viewed it at the time they wrote that material. But looking at it today in today's eyes in the past is not really fair, because the decisions that were being made by the people at that time, or the people who were making the decisions, were of that time. And it may not be fair to judge them by that time. Although, you know, as we're seeing now, maybe it is, you know, once again. So I think that every person taking this will have a new appreciation on our history and what it really means.
And those great courses really are a great, simple, easy way to get that knowledge, to think differently in this case, to have that background, to be able to have these conversations.
Well, simple is not probably the proper word, because these are professors, university professors. So they're teaching these to an educated, or hopefully an educated population. At the end of it, you're not given an exam. You're basically auditing these courses.
Okay.
These are not spoon-fed materials. You're going to have your previous introduction to ideas will grow from, you know, a new introduction to whatever the course is on.
So I didn't mean simple. I meant accessible. These are an easy way to get to this material. That's the 21st century. Education has changed so much that you have access to all of this information. And the great courses is one of the ways that you have utilized to get to the next level of thinking.
So one of the other truisms that I took from this course is that the United States has fumbled their way through a lot of military conflicts, a lot of them. And while we are just a massive, massive industrial group that can kind of overpower people with resources, but what we're really good, the United States is, you know, may just fumble their way through the military exercise. And certainly this is not a criticism of the military or how they do things. But what I will say is that we are incredibly gifted at negotiation after those wars. And so that has been one of the beautiful parts, is sort of learning a little bit about how that worked. Well, anyway, like I said, this course, because of how it's presented, benefits from multiple listenings. And it's one of those areas you just pick up a chapter and just go through it and just glean something. Every one of them is just a new way of looking at things.
Wonderful. That's The Skeptic's Guide to American History by Mark Stoller. And you can go to thegreatcourses.com and find that one.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know how math works, Chip? Do you understand math?
I do. I want a Willy Wonka. I want an Oompa Loompa, Steve. I want an Oompa Loompa.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, that great film that we love that has spanned the test of time, is 50 years old this week.
Well, he's still young and in his prime, Steve. Although Gene Wilder no longer is there. But Cynical Gene is a meme.
Cynical Gene is a meme? I'm not familiar with Cynical Gene. Can you explain the meme to me?
The meme, it's a look of Willy Wonka giving sort of a rolling his eyes.
Oh,
usually with something that's more cynical.
No, like, please stop. Got it. This is one of my earliest recollections of watching movies was Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and I was pretty terrified by this film.
Well, Steve, you should be terrified by it. Willy Wonka disposed of a number of children to get to Charlie. And ultimately, Charlie survives and is given a chocolate factory full of young people.
Very small people that look different from him and act very differently. This is a big cultural touchstone that has a lot of lessons about all sorts of things. And I met the Oompa Loompa from the remake, from the Tim Burton version, which was actually called Charlie and the Chocolate Factory instead of Willy Wonka. Deep Roy, who played all of the Oompa Loompas. I have a lovely picture of him hanging on my wall.
Well, Gene Wilder was our truly the star at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And there are a lot of really nice recollections from some of the stars, especially some of the children's stars, about how Gene Wilder found out that some of the young people who were starring in it did not have chaperones mm-hmm. to help them, and how the rest of the actors basically looked to protect these young people. And that was things like making sure that they had somebody to eat dinner with at night. And things of that nature. And they got to share their times. Obviously, Gene Wilder is a super special guy.
Yeah.
Friend of Gilda Radner, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The deep love affair of Gene Wilder and Gilda Radner is one of my favorite love stories of the era.
Exactly. And yeah. And you know what? Any movie that stars burping has got to be pretty good.
There's a whole burping scene. There's a whole burping song in the musical, and it is a challenge to put on stage for sure.
But it's a gas.
Oh, Lord. Oh, boy. Everybody, come on out. The comedian is here. His name is Chip, and he's going to be here all week. Try the veal.
Exactly. Tip your waiters.
Speaking of nostalgia, baseball cards, Chip. Did you have baseball cards when you were growing up?
I was not a card collector, Steve. I had other collections.
Okay. I do still have quite a few baseball cards from the 1980s when I was really interested in the personalities of baseball. Topps will no longer make baseball cards starting in 2022.
Isn't that interesting? So for those who are not familiar with baseball cards, Topps was one of, if not the premier card maker
mm-hmm.
for many, many years. In fact, it started back in, I think, 1950. Since that time, Michael Eisner, former Disney CEO, became one of the owners. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part of it is Topps, owned by Michael Eisner, wasn't even brought to the table.
Ooh,
to boy. Renegotiate the terms of their rights to print baseball cards. And it looks like Major League Baseball Players Association with the National Basketball Association Player Association and the National Football League Player Association basically took ownership or part ownership of a new card company called Fanatics, and they're going to make their own baseball cards. They're going to have exclusive rights to that.
It's big business for sure. At least it used to be big business. I don't know what the current trading card collector is spending on baseball cards, and not to mention football cards and basketball and hockey, but it's certainly changed. The we went through an era where we tried to go to an all-digital format where people were collecting these bits, which didn't make much sense. Now we have these NFTs, these non-fungible tokens that are mind-boggling to me.
I'm not even familiar with that. I'm thinking more along the lines of the paper cards. The industry blew up back, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago. It was also part of how Marvel Comics went through bankruptcy, or was bankrupt, because they actually owned, owned a baseball card company. So they flooded the market with comics and cards, and everyone just thought that somehow they were not going to go down in value. But they all forgot the big deal, which is scarcity. Mm-hmm. And demand makes something more expensive.
Right.
And there was never a supply issue of any of any of these things during that era. And ultimately, when everyone recognized that, the market exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Or imploded.
Imploded. Yeah. And my binders full of baseball cards that I can reach over and grab right now, not worth anything for sure.
Yeah. Other than good times.
Nostalgia. Good time. It's about nostalgia. And looking toward the future where our robot overlords certainly will have great baseball cards.
Well, of course, as Flight of the Conchords told us, that in the future there will be a couple dances known by our robot overlords, the Robo and the Robot, both of those dances. Steve, do we have anything that could possibly match that type of insight?
Yes. Elon Musk is back in the news this week. Apparently, Tesla is working on a bipedal android, a person-shaped android, is apparently in the testing, in the works at Tesla, and Elon Musk, being the person that he is, has heard the rumors of this robot and decided to show off his new robot on stage, and it wasn't an android, it was just a person in a costume, and they did a fun little dance and everybody laughed.
Steve, are you sure that wasn't a robot?
I am sure that was not a robot. We have some was it
Anthony Daniels, by the way?
It could have been. It could have been Anthony Daniels. He certainly is spry enough, even at his age. The C-3PO is still alive and well and cynical as ever.
The chances of them doing this, Steve.
Never tell me the odds.
That's right.
It's fun.
Which is a good idea, because when you're dealing with Elon Musk, it's never tell me the odds of, you know, like the tiles that are going to be put on your roof that are going to be the solar.
It's fine. It'll be fine. Elon Musk is a genius and he'll figure it out.
Well, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I hope so. We'll find out. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. Our email is toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflug.
We'll see you in the future.